offering a most humble pranams at Bhagwan's lotus feet. Dear listeners, we welcome you to this episode of Afternoon Satsang. This is Prem from Team Radio Sai, joining you with Arvind, offering a most humble pranams to Swami and thanking him for this opportunity and thanking all of you for joining us. Sairam Arvind.
Sairam Prem. Sairam, dear listeners, this is that wonderful time of the year when, you know, we could see Swami in different manifestations and different forms. This was that time of the year when any devotee following any one of those three famous paths to the Lord, be it Karma Yoga, Bhakti Yoga or Jnana Yoga, would find something to relate with and something to enjoy. Puttaparthi has a plethora of festivals and events scheduled throughout the year. But the Dasara, the 10-day festival, is very special for this single reason, that it encompasses all the different forms of worship, all the different pathways to the Lord. It has the Yagnam, it has the Grama Seva, it has wonderful inspiring talks that are given. It caters to the body, mind and the soul, a wholesome meal which Swami spent a lot of his time and energy nourishing throughout the years. And therefore, dear listeners, we thought that it would be only apt that we spend some time dilating on the magnificence and majesty of this 10-day festival, this 10-day grand festival that Swami always gave importance to, the Navaratri or the Dashera.
Maybe we could start with one beautiful incident, and in fact the story of a bhajan.
Okay.
During one of the Dasharas, Swami was walking past the devotees in the Poonachandra auditorium, and as he came near the ladies singers who were singing bhajans, The gents were singing bhajans, and the bhajan was just getting over when Swami came near the ladies singers and said, "Kotta bhajan padandi," meaning, sing a new song.
Okay,
and they're supposed to start. The last line of the previous bhajan is going on, and they're just supposed to start, and Swami said this and walked away. And so the lady singers, the two main singers were there, were panicking. What do we sing? So a new bhajan, and to be composed in less than a few minutes. So those two singers later shared that as Swami was climbing the stairs to the Poonachandra stage, There was so much of feminine grace with which Swami was walking. The way Swami was holding one of his robe, the robe with one of his hands. And so gracefully when Swami ascended, they said, without much of thought and without preparation, they sang the bhajan, Durga Lakshmi Saraswati Sai Jagan Mata.
Wow.
And that moment, this bhajan actually came to be when they saw Swami in that, such a motherly, graceful walk of Swami.
Talking of the motherly, graceful walk of Swami, we could see, as I said earlier, different facets or aspects of Swami in this one single festival. Usually Shivratri times Swami is more like serious, and we find it so easy to identify him with Rudra and Shiva, that kind of Gambhiratvam, that's what they call it in Sanskrit. I don't know the equivalent in English. It's a kind of, you can't say it's
majesty,
strict.
Or
kind
of a royal majesty.
Yeah, royal Divine majesty, where he's not that he's strict. At the same time, he's not that benevolent, not benevolent and kind. A kind of majesty, where you look up to him more in awe.
Right.
So that is the kind of feeling one gets during the Shivratri festival. At the same time, if you take some other festival, say Christmas for example, it is so different. Swami is in the silvery white robe, and even, of course, it's due to the number of overseas devotees that arrive. But that was the time of the year when I remember we would hear the maximum number of English words that Swami would speak in day-to-day conversation. And his English, though not perfect in the worldly sense, was so sweet. When did you come? How did you come? And Swami would even use English phrases in the discourse. Practice dharma. All will be well. All these, in between. So like that, when we see, Dasara was a festival where you cannot say that Swami was just like this. There were times, when Swami would be the grand Veda Purusha, receiving the oblations at the Veda Purusha Saptah Jnana Yagnam, in all his grandeur and majesty, where one would get filled with awe. At the same time, as those tiny tots from primary school chanted the Vedas at the beginning of the evening Vidvan Mahasabha, or the student spoke, the kind of love that Swami would shower, just looking into those eyes, one could realize how the Divine Mother is, how the Mother is with whom Ramakrishna Paramahamsa fell in love with. The beauty, the love, the grace of the feminine aspect of divinity, the Divine Mother, that could be seen. And you know, what else can you call this other than the love of the Mother? I am reminded of one small incident that one of the students narrated during one of the Prashanti Vidvan Mahasabhas.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it has been titled as the Prashanti Vidvan Mahasabha, meaning the Mahasabha, the grand
gathering
of the Vidvans, of the scholars and the wise people in Prashanti. And here would be students speaking. And he said an analogy where a mother proudly presents her little child. The child stands in front of the guests who have come home and just chants out a single shloka or maybe a nursery rhyme, Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star. And then the mother is filled with pride and says, see my child, how fantastic he is or she is. And when the mother tells it with so much pride, that pride and joy is infectious, the guests too appreciate. So this student, this brother said that there's nothing great in what the child did. There's nothing great in Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star. But it is the kind of pride and the love that the mother showers that makes Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star into a grand and fantastic thing. In the same way, he said, we are no Vidvans. We are not any kind of scholars when we are speaking here. But just because Swami pats us on the back, has pride in his eyes and love in his heart pouring on us, the world considers us worthy to speak in his presence. It is indeed amazing that when the Prashanti Vidvan Mahasabha was held, most of the speaking slots were given to the students and the teachers of the institute. This straightaway is an example of the divine motherly love. Another aspect that would often be seen during this Dasara, which is also Navaratri dedicated to the mother.
It is very true, but tracing back the roots of the Prashanti Vidvan Mahasabha, we've all seen the latest version of Prashanti Vidvan Mahasabha, but
That is in the 90s what I am speaking about.
But if we see, it started in the 1960s.
Mm-hmm.
And during that time, Prashanti Vidvan Mahasabha was really a Vidvan Mahasabha, where you used to have all these Vedic scholars coming and giving absolutely,
spellbinding talks.
Right, about Navratri, about the different scriptures, about Vedas and all those things. And if you look at it, see the change. One of the four things which Swami said was his mission was Vidvat Poshana. He said to foster the scholars was one of his missions.
Mm.
And in the initial years, Swami would have this Prashanti Vidvan Mahasabha in East Godavari, in Venkatgiri, in
the different districts of Andhra Pradesh.
Districts, and wherever people were able to host such gatherings. But in the later years, Swami of course had Vidwan speaking, but he was also kind of encouraging and fostering that desire to be scholarly in, I think, each student.
Beautiful. Yes. You know, you said Vidvat Poshana, Veda Poshana. This was the exact thought that occurred to me also right now, that in the beginning, Swami fostered the scholars, Swami fostered the Vedas. Later on, gradually, he moved on to fostering scholarliness in whoever comes in his ambit.
Right.
Fostering the Vedas in whoever comes in his ambit. Today we see some of the most phenomenal talks, most wonderful thoughts and insights being shared by people whom nobody in the world will really expect to be sharing such things, and that is 100% credit to Swami. What the scholars used to do, now we have, ordinary household people, devotees from all sections of society, sharing and enjoying such profound truths which were once considered to be the realm of only the scholars. The intelligentsia as they are called. But Swami has made it available to everyone, and that is what is true Vidvat Poshana, as you put it. Rather than fostering only scholars, he has fostered scholarship in everyone.
Right.
And the same holds good even for the Vedas.
Absolutely. The way the Yajna used to take place those years, and Swami used to carefully select those people who would chant, and I think the only students who got the opportunity to chant along were the Veda Patishala students. But now you have students right from the primary school till research scholars and teachers who join the pundits and chant Veda.
Again, there also we can see the shift, Prem. Imagine in the beginning, the first school that Swami started, Patashala is nothing but a school. It was a school only for Vedic studies.
Right.
So first it started with fostering the Vedas. And now, it doesn't matter whether it's Bal Vikas, whether it is a higher secondary school, whether it's institute, whether you're studying a bachelor's degree in commerce or science, whether you're doing a master's degree in, whether you're doing business administration, whatever that you may be doing, side by side, you're learning the Vedas. First it was fostering the Vedas, and then it is fostering the Vedas in every kind of educational institution. That is a quantum leap that Swami has achieved so gradually and almost seamlessly. And that is where, you know, the divine motherly love aspect of Swami comes in, I think. Because why did you learn the Vedas, Prem? Why did I learn the Vedas? Nothing. We knew nothing about the Vedas. We just knew that we love Swami. And we knew that Swami loves the Vedas. That love for Swami automatically got transferred to the Vedas. That is the kind of fostering that Swami has done, whether it comes to the Vedas or whether it comes to scholarship also. And that, I feel, you know, is one aspect of the Divine Mother, where she inspires things from the source, not by force. It's all done in love.
Absolutely, and that's what we've seen during Dashara when boys chanting Vedam, and now it is not just the boys chanting Vedam, the entire crowd joins in, devotees from all over the world.
Mm.
In fact, you know, that is what Swami said when he inaugurated the Veda Patashala.
Mm.
Swami said, this school will spread Vedas to the entire world.
Wow.
But you know, the school modified into a arts and science college to a university, but Swami kept up the promise that this will be helpful in spreading the Veda, learning of Vedas to the entire world. You know, today we have Japanese coming in chanting Vedas, you have the Veda Union from Europe, and you have Germans and everybody coming and chanting Vedas, and how Swami fostered it, you know, towards the end.
Really, these are some acts of the Lord which we cannot understand. I remember one of the members of the Veda group saying that he's been there from the times of the Veda Patashala.
Mm-hmm.
And he was saying that, you know, Swami had promised so many things about the Veda Patashala. Finally, it had to shut down. So he was saying that at that time I thought, what is this, Swami? How can the divine word go wrong? You know, when he was saying that, he said that once when Guru Nanak was visiting, when he was touring, he went through two villages. One village, everybody treated him very badly. They didn't give him place to rest. So the master said, may this village be in one piece. May all the people remain in harmony in this place, safe and secure. The next village, everybody treated him so well, gave him hospitality, and you know, it was the most amazing night that they spent over there. The next day before leaving, Guru Nanak Dev, the Guru says, you know, may this village get scattered. May these people get scattered and let them not remain here anymore. Let them get scattered everywhere. So they say, the disciples who heard this strange boon and curse tell, this is really funny. We understand that, you know, you are large-hearted, that you blessed even those who treated you badly, you blessed them that they should be good. But why are you cursing those who treated you well? He says, you do not understand. The kind of people in this village, they have to be present all over the world. Spread this goodness and nobility. And that's why I bless them, that may you spread all around the world. May your goodness be recognized around the world. So that's actually the blessing. You know, he was saying in a similar manner, we thought that with the collapse of the Veda Patshala, the Veda has gone. But it was more like a seed dispersal, where the Veda Patshala was the pod in which it was concentrating and building up. And once it reached a critical mass, it just exploded. And then now Veda has become part of even so-called modern schools. And as you said, in different parts of the world, across cultures, across religions. And it is only in retrospect we are able to see the master plan of our dear Swami.
Right. Coming back to the celebration of Dashara, and we spoke so much about the Vedas, we spoke about the Yajna which happens here,
mm-hmm.
the Vidwan Mahasabha, and all that started in 1960s, 61, 62 and onwards. But we also had the opportunity of speaking about Dashara in the early years, right? Because beauty is, I don't know why, but Dashara was always one of the special functions. Dashara and then Swami's birthday.
In fact, we also discussed that in 1947
right,
itself.
One of the first few festivals to be celebrated. And in fact, we go through so many devotees' accounts where they say that Swami would often tell them, come for Dashara, come for Dashara. Or if they come a little ahead of Dashara, they would be forced to stay back for Dashara by Swami. that definitely must mean something very special for this festival.
I was pondering about what could be the speciality of Dasara. You know, if we Google this, you easily come across Dasara is derived from the Sanskrit terms Dashahara, which means the defeat of the ten-headed demon, which is Ravana. It is believed that it was on the day of Vijayadashmi, the tenth day of Dasara, literally means the victorious tenth day, that is Vijayadashmi. And it is called Vijayadashmi because it is on that day that, you know, Lord Rama killed the ten-headed demon Ravana. And it is said that, you know, in continuation that it took Rama about 10 to 20 days to return from Sri Lanka, that is where the demon Ravana ruled, back to his capital in Ayodhya. And the day he came back to Ayodhya, everybody lit lamps all over the town. And therefore, that day has been celebrated as Deepavali or Diwali, the festival of lights.
Right.
But coming back to Dasara, so it is supposed to be the celebration of the death of the ten-headed one. I was reminded of an incident that happened in the university. You know, once Swami had promised that today I will come and give a mantra.
Mm-hmm.
Now, all the spiritual aspirants get thrilled with this when a guru says, I will give a mantra, because it is believed that a single mantra can redeem you. And Swami said, I will give it to all the students when I come to the auditorium today. And this mantra is enough. You don't need anything else in life. This one mantra is enough to redeem you from everything. You know, people were very G'd up and charged up. What is this mantra? What is this mantra? They were very excited. Swami comes to the auditorium and begins with an elaborate introduction of the great mantra that he is going to give and highlights the benefits that one would accrue by using the mantra. And as he goes on building up his introduction, everybody is eager. Swami, what is the mantra? What is the mantra? What is the mantra? And then Swami says, the mantra is this. Nenu pashu kadu. I am not an animal. Everybody wondered, you know, what kind of mantra is this?
Mantra should at least be in Sanskrit.
Yeah, not in Telugu. You know, that is our preconceived notion about a mantra. Swami says, but it doesn't end there. Next part of the mantra is, Nenu manavudu, which means, I am a man, I am a human being. I am not an animal, I am a human. Swami says, it doesn't end there. Nenu manavudu kadu, I am not a human. Nenu devudu, I am God. Swami said, this is the mantra. I am not an animal, I am a man. I am not a man, I am God. He said, this one mantra if you stick to throughout life, that is enough. You know, on a little deeper thinking, if we see, Swami has said, when it is said that Rama killed the ten-headed demon Ravana, it is not as if Ravana had ten heads. You know, Swami says, if somebody comes with ten heads, day-to-day living becomes so tough. We can just imagine brushing your teeth, combing your hair. I mean, so Swami says 10 heads does not mean actual 10 heads. He says when Rama killed Ravana, it means those 10 heads are symbolized. The first 6 heads are the 6 vices, which is Kama, Krodha, Lobha, Moha, Mada, Matsarya. Desire, anger, greed, jealousy, envy and desire.
Pride,
yeah. He says these 6. And the next 4 heads are Mano, Buddhi, Chitta, Ahankara. That is the mind, the intellect,
the memory,
and the ego.
And the ego.
Ahankara. Now if we see, the first 6 things, that is the 6 vices, they are often called as animal qualities. The next 4 are human qualities. So Dasara is a day when first you transcend animal qualities. That is like, I am not an animal, I am a man. Next you transcend human qualities, which is I am not a man, I am God, and then become divine. So that great mantra is also the message of Dasara.
I mean, very true actually, because you know the other name for Dasara, this festival, is Navaratri. You know, the 9 nights, and the significance of those 9 nights is you have 3 nights for each form of the goddess. The goddess is worshipped as, you know, that bhajan goes, Durga, Lakshmi and Saraswati. And that is the order in which they are worshipped. The first 3 days are in worship of Durga, the next 3 are for Lakshmi, and the last 3 are for Saraswati. You know, generally if you look at it, they are said that Durga is for valor, and Lakshmi is for wealth, and Saraswati is for learning.
So these are, Durga is the goddess of valor.
Right.
Goddess of wealth is Lakshmi
and
goddess of
learning
is Saraswati.
Education,
okay,
is Saraswati.
Hmm.
But you know, the beautiful idea is, if you look at it, Durga is worshipped as Mahishasura Mardini, the goddess who killed an asura by name Mahishasura. And Mahisha actually means a buffalo. And the story goes, you know, Devi Mahatmyam, it says that when Durga is in a battle with Mahishasura, he takes the forms of different animals. He comes as a bull and he comes as a
bear.
Many animals. And finally, he comes back to his original form, which is that of a buffalo, and she kills him. Okay, so the idea of worshipping Mahishasura Mardini, is that the first 3 days are for removing the animal nature of ourselves. Like as you said, when Swami said, I am not an animal and I am a man, the first 3 days are actually for that. You remove the animal nature. And the animal nature, more than anything else, is what is the quality which you associate with a buffalo? It's laziness and sloth, right?
Yes.
So it is said that the first 3 days of Navratri is to remove that slothfulness and laziness.
That is what we call tamas, right?
Right, tamas. So she is the dispeller of tamas. And the next step in sadhana, the first step is to removal of what is...
One point here, Prem. You know, it is often said, tamas is sloth and inactivity of the negative kind, not the kind that yogi does. So it is said that how do you overcome sloth and inactivity? With activity. With lot of, you know, that is where rajas comes in, which is passion. You know, rajas also includes anger. Right. It also includes enthusiasm. Anything that is energetic.
Activity.
So you use rajas to overcome tamas. And it is Durga, the deity who stands for that. That is rajas. Means she is known as the fiery one, the angry one, the most powerful one, the brave one. She uses rajas to destroy tamas.
Right. And so even in a spiritual process, if you're a spiritual aspirant, these are the three steps you have to do. The first step is remove what is bad. Okay, Swami says avoid bad company is the first step. First you remove what is wrong in you, give up bad qualities and all that. And the second step is to inculcate good qualities. If you look at the second deity which is worshipped, it's Lakshmi. And generally we say Lakshmi is a giver of wealth.
Correct.
But the significance is she is the giver of spiritual wealth.
Yeah, we often think it's only gold coins. Right. And that's how she is depicted too. Gold coins dropping from her palm.
Exactly. And that is why it is said, you know, what is true wealth is in Vedanta and in Indian culture, it is said, Shat Sampati, it's called. The sixfold wealth.
Okay.
In that, what are those things which is like mind control, body control, one-pointedness, earnestness, and the ability to achieve what you start with. You know, these are the things. And that's the beauty. So first is you remove your slothfulness and then you reinforce yourself with all these good qualities. And then the last 3 days, which is for Saraswati, is the one who gives vidya, who gives knowledge.
Wow.
So when you've done this, then you're eligible to receive knowledge.
Knowledge or wisdom?
Wisdom.
You know, again, it comes by going to the tamas rajas. It is then said that though rajas is better than tamas, it is not the ultimate. Because rajas, as we said, it is passion, it's enthusiasm, it's energy. It is bound to have ups and downs. You may be very passionate, enthusiastic and energetic about something, but when it results in failure, you're disappointed. When it results in success, you're thrilled and your joy knows no bounds. So, it is not, even rajas is not the ideal state to be in. So, you're supposed to move from rajas to sattva. Sattva is a kind of equanimous state. Okay, so, where you are having involvement, but you have no attachment. So, it is a more advanced state and therefore you have to overcome rajas using sattva. And that is where you need the wealth of character. The wealth of, as you said, mind control, body control, all this is needed. And so once, so Durga gets you from tamas to rajas and Lakshmi gets you from rajas to sattva. But you know, it does not end there. Swami says, to become one with the divine, you have to be gunatita. One without any attributes. You're supposed to be colorless. I mean, and that colorlessness actually comes with the combination of all colors. That's what we see. All colors combine to form white. So in order to reach one with divinity, you have to go beyond the attributes or beyond the qualities. Sattva is not good enough. Sattva makes you a noble and good loved man, but it doesn't help you break the bondage and become one with the Lord.
Absolutely. That's what Swami says, that you know, each one is like a different metal chain. Swami says that one is an iron chain, the other is a silver chain, and sattva is a golden chain.
But it's a chain nevertheless. Yes. Yes.
Which has to be broken.
So it has to be broken. And that is where Saraswati, the goddess of learning, wisdom. You know, that is what we were speaking. So, she helps you transcend beyond sattva also and become gunatita, that is one with the Lord.
And it is said that that culminates in Vijayadashami, where you achieve the victory which you are after.
Beautiful. You know, so this Navaratri, as you said, there are more than 2-3 kinds of Navaratris, I believe.
Exactly, no, I just got the list here. There are 5 Navaratris.
Navaratri basically means 9 nights.
9 nights. So there are 5 such 9 nights which are very sacred.
Okay.
And you know, just to name a few, maybe I won't get the pronunciations right, but nevertheless, one is Vasanta Navaratri, then there is a Gupta Navaratri, and there is a Sharad Navaratri, which is the one which we are celebrating now.
The most important one.
Right. And Pausha Navaratri and Megha Navaratri.
Oh, Megha Navaratri. Megha is a cloud, that is a rainy.
Yeah, must be the rainy season. And the beauty is, you know, the two most important Navaratris is the one which we are celebrating now, the Sharad Navaratri and the Vasant Navaratri.
That comes somewhere in April.
Right, that ends with Ramanavami.
Huh.
So, if you see season-wise, it's almost like the seasons which we are going through now. One Navaratri ends in the beginning of summer and the other Navaratri ends in the beginning of winter.
Hmm.
And among these two, the one we are celebrating now, which is the beginning of winter, is very essential. And again, coming back to that, you know, if you look at it, going back to what Swami said, I am not an animal, I am a man.
Okay.
Going by that very statement, see, the idea is we all have come from animals. And the nature of an animal is to hibernate during winter.
Correct.
You know, that's an inbuilt program.
Yeah, because the food available will be less.
Right.
So therefore you conserve your energy sources, so you gorge on a lot of food, become fat, and then just hibernate.
Go to sleep. Huh. And the ancients found that, you know, that's a biological thing which has held on even in the human body. That is why when it gets winter, we actually start sagging in our enthusiasm.
I find it tough to get up in the morning and come to office, Prem.
So that is why it is said that in such a situation, when you are bound and when you are vulnerable to laziness, you thrust yourself with extra worship. And that is why they put an important festival in the beginning of winter, where you literally pick yourself up and push yourself and enthuse yourself to worship. And, you know, so beautifully it goes with that, I'm not an animal, I'm a man. And going from that, I'm not an animal, to I'm God.
It's almost as if, therefore, Durga has been placed at first. You know, because she has to wake us out of
this. Yes. You know, that's one of the most fearful forms which we worship in the Indian culture, right? Durga and Kali.
And Durga Puja in West Bengal is in West Bengal is where it is done. And yes, of course, so those are the rituals that are conducted in Prashanti Nilayam are related to all these three, and we can
right,
see that.
That's the beauty, right? And I think you said that in the beginning also. The kind of activities which happen around Dashara here actually fulfill all these three, you could say, goals of having the celebration.
Correct. You know, to start off with, there is the Yagnam which begins, you know. It is often said,
I think nowadays, the Gram Seva starts before the Yagnam, right?
Correct.
A couple of days before the Yagnam starts.
Correct. Because Gram Seva is done for the 10 days. The Yagnam is done only as a Saptaha Yagnam, which is for 7 days. So the first thing is Gram Seva, which is kicking you into activity. The students from the various educational institutions here, they go to almost, I think, about 100 or so villages.
150 villages
around, and distribute Swami's love in the form of food and clothes. More than anything else, a kind of assurance that, you know, we care. And it's a great learning experience. But as we said, it begins with activity. Activity, that is action that is needed to overcome sloth. Then the next comes...
Next comes, of course, the Yagnam, which we have, where, you know, the beauty of the thing is, when we have a normal Vedam bhajan session in the mornings, you know, the Vedam is there, 1 hour you sit there, and even if you don't know Vedam, you participate in it, and then you kind of have an opportunity to participate in the bhajan. But during Navaratri, it's for 1.5 hours, you just sit there and listen to those Vedic chants. And I think a way of passive involvement is expected of us.
And one thing that I always wondered, Prem, was, what greater miracle do you want to see? You know, the age group, the teenage years, and even the 20s, are the time when, you know, every boy and girl is bubbling with energy and you just see, look around, you cannot find somebody who can aram se, comfortably just sit in one place. Being still is so difficult.
Absolutely.
That was what we were discussing, right?
Right.
Means we always crave for activity. We have been trained in a manner that if you want to overcome boredom, you have to do activity. If you want to make a life fruitful, you have to indulge in activity. Anything you do, you have to do activity. We are never told that you can overcome boredom by just being still. You can achieve a lot by just being still. But that is what is necessary. After you use rajas to overcome tamas, if you have to inculcate sattva, the next guna, you need that stillness. And that is what the yagnam does, I feel. Isn't it a miracle to see so many primary school children, teenagers, people with bubbling energy, just sitting silently for hours together, absolutely doing nothing. And I feel this is the time, as you said, one is overcoming animal. And this is where they are truly human beings. They are being, they are in the present. They are neither in the past. You know, it's not called human was, nor is it called human going to be. It's called human being. I feel the world so magically has been made to indicate to us that you have to live in the present and just be still. And that is something that the yagna inculcates almost unconsciously in everybody. The movement from animal quality, the movement from tamas to rajas and rajas to sattva.
And of course, I think with Swami, it's not like 3 days of action, 3 days of silence and 3 days of learning. It is all enmeshed and
each day has all
right, each day has all these things, because morning we go for the Gram Seva and sometimes we sit for the Vedam, and again in the evening you have the Vidwan Mahasabha where the learning process happens.
Yes, that is
the where the wisdom is given through the many scholars and students who speak.
And the best thing was, of course now it has been replaced by a PA system, but before, we know Swami used to deliver the divine discourse on each day, and what greater wisdom. And that used to be the way in which we could learn to transcend beyond the gunas, because Swami would be speaking the ultimate truth in the most simplest of languages, in the most simplest manner in which everybody can understand. And so therefore, you see, Dasara has all these three. The Navaratri aspect was built in so beautifully by Swami, and it continues to this day.
And I think we cannot have any completeness in our discussion about Navaratri festival if we don't go into a little bit of detail about the yagnam which is happening.
Hmm.
Because with time, we have started questioning so much of our cultural activities. Why a yagnam? Why offer it to a fire? Why do certain things, somebody doing a Surya Namaskar, kneeling down, bending and getting up and doing all those things, and so many other physical activities which go along with something like a yagnam, which are seemingly meaningless to us now. And I think as the generations come by, as we are moving more and more away from our Indian culture, we question these more.
Exactly. And there's also this, if I can say, ugly development that if I do not understand it, it is therefore meaningless because I don't understand it. The thing is, I don't even make an attempt to understand. I remember in one discourse, speaking about the yagnam, the sacrificial fire, Swami, lashed out. He said, people say that so much of ghee, that is clarified butter, the purest form, from milk you get cream, from cream you get butter, from butter you get ghee. It's the purest form of milk, This is poured into the fire. People say it's a wastage of ghee. Then Swami says, they are fools. They are fools who consider it foolish for a farmer to scatter seeds in the field, saying that he is wasting seeds. They do not realize that those same seeds will give a thousandfold harvest at the right time. And then Swami went on to say, Swami said that everything that in you, in your human body, your physical strength, your mental strength, your attitude, Swami says, is influenced by your head do and blood do, Swami used to say. Your blood and head influence your attitudes, your strength, everything, your physical and mental characteristics. And then Swami said, this blood and head is nourished by the food that you eat. Swami said, the food depends on the land in which it is grown. The fertility of the land depends on the rain that falls on it. The rain that falls depends on the clouds from which it arrives. And the clouds are formed from the smoke. Which is true because, even when we do artificial rainfall, what we do is we seed particles in the atmosphere artificially through aeroplanes, and then rainfall occurs. So it's particulate matter that causes condensation, and smoke is particulate matter. And Swami said, in the atmosphere, what kind of smoke is there? All dirty smoke. Dirty in every sense. Physically it's dirty because it's made of poisonous substances. Spiritually it is dirty because it's being emitted by, you know, God knows factories where working conditions, God knows how it is. Swami said, instead of that, if you have pure smoke, let us look at the smoke from the yagna. It is pure scientifically because it's burning in an excess of oxygen. It is white in color. It's pure smoke physically and scientifically. And even in a spiritual point, from a spiritual viewpoint, it is a smoke that is surcharged with prayers and intense feelings of samasta loka sukhino bhavanti. Let there be peace and prosperity everywhere. And when this smoke from the yagnas form the clouds, the whole chain is nourished and it comes back as good to you. And Prem, just look around Puttaparthi. I remember even when I came in 1998 and joined as a student, Puttaparthi was not so beautiful, lush green. Today it is almost like a hill station. We get chills in winter and we have greenery, we have water in the Chitravati. I cannot just call this a coincidence. I am strongly convinced that there is a correlation between the yagnam and the prosperity and greenery that we see in Puttaparthi and the neighboring region.
Definitely. In fact, you know, Puttaparthi is said to be in the middle of Rayalaseema. Rayalaseema means the land of rocks. You know, because that is what this area was. And today, it is a marked difference when you drive into Puttaparthi, you can see the landscape changing to becoming greener as you approach Puttaparthi. And as you said, you know, there should be a direct correlation, because every year, unfailingly, during the Dashara Yajnam, or in, for that matter, any Yajnam which happens in Prashanthi Nilayam, you would find showers happening. Right?
Not only Yajnam, Prem, even this year, Dasara, the first day the Yajnam began, we had rains.
Right.
It rains invariably every year on Swami's birthday,
during
on Ugadi,
Sahasra
Purna Chandra Darshanam, and you know, they did one Purna Sahasra Kumbhabhishekam. I mean, that was too striking, Prem. I mean, they offered 1,000 potfuls of water from 1,000 rivers in India, you know, different rivers in India. They offered it to the Lord, and instantly that day, it was not the monsoon at all. It poured. On Onam it rains. Christmas it rains. Janmashtami it rains. It might be a drizzle, but nevertheless it happens. How do you explain this? Throughout the year. So that is why, you know, I was thinking of another analogy. You know, the way English, if we see it's progressing today, it is because thanks to the SMS language and the chat language, so many words are getting broken, and such a beautiful language is actually getting broken into a language filled with grammatical errors and filled with a language of ease. But with that, what we are losing is poetry and beauty and literature. Just yesterday I was asking a student who is about 20 year old. I asked him, have you read P.G. Woodhouse? You know, P.G. Woodhouse was a favorite when we were that age. When we were in our 20s, we used to borrow and read. They had not even heard of it. And when I narrated a few jokes from the P.G. Woodhouse book, which is so beautiful English, he could not appreciate it. And he felt that I am old fashioned, and that's why I'm not up to date, and therefore I'm able to enjoy P.G. Woodhouse. But I realize that you have lost taste for that simply by neglect, and you're not able to appreciate it. That is when it struck me that maybe a similar kind has happened with the Vedas and with what Swami tells us also. So long have we neglected it. If English could lose its sheen and charm in a span of just 10 years, what to say of these Vedas that are stood the test of time and come so far? Maybe we are not able to appreciate. And that is why we need to put in effort to realize and understand and see the magic. And that is what I get inspired when I see people from so many foreign countries coming and doing, not just learning the Vedas, but dedicating their lives for the study of Vedas. It makes me wonder, oh my God, what is it that they are seeing? That they have given up their homes thousands of miles away and they have dedicated their lives for the study of the Vedas.
Indeed. But Arvind, before we come to the Vedas, you know, one thing about being a part of some of these celebrations here, and what we could give, I just want to add something which I heard when I went to the hospital a couple of weeks back. You said Swami tells that all our good thoughts come from our blood and head. You know, blood do, head do, tutu. That's what Swami would say. The parents are the ones who give. And I know we went for a blood donation a couple of weeks back. There, the doctor who's in charge of the department, he was telling that it is one of the good things which we can do being in Prashanthi Nilayam. Because he said our blood is actually of the purest form. Because we don't have any bad habits. We don't eat non-vegetarian food. And as you said, it is purified by the amount of, you know, the holy smoke which is all around, the vibrations which we are going through.
The bhajans.
The Vedam we have heard, the bhajan we have heard. So, if we all could make it a regular practice of going and doing that blood donation once in 3 months, that's the permissible, duration,
medical
interval in which we can do it.
Mm.
We would actually be doing an immense seva to the people who are coming. Because all these people who are coming with all kinds of sickness are coming with not only physical ailments, but also related mental ailments. And he said giving blood to these people are not just saving their lives, but actually giving a lot to their living itself, changing the way of life.
You know, you make a very powerful point, Prem. I remember reading about a research. You know, they found out that when they were treating cancer patients, cancer patient treatment consists of nothing but two things.
Mm-hmm.
Destruction of the cancer cells through radiation and medication, which is like a bombing process. Which means it will also destroy good cells.
Good cells.
You just cannot separate the bad cells and the good cells. The second step involves nurturing and nourishing the good cells back to health, so helping the patient to recover. And that's why when a patient is undergoing chemotherapy, he or she loses hair,
right,
gets wrinkles and so many things. And then there's a period of rest and recuperation so that he's ready for the next bomb assault on him
it's
or her.
It's almost called conscious poisoning. That's what they say.
They observed that in two groups of patients, one that was exposed to, you know, good thoughts, good feelings, good sounds, good music, optimism and positivity and cheer, whereas the other group that lacked all this, they saw that the chances of healing were almost more than double in the former.
Mm-hmm.
And that is when, you know, they scientific paper, I do not remember the exact details and the scientific terminology used, but they say that when new cells are formed in the body, it is DNA and the other things are only at the physical level. There is something happening at the subtle level also, which is part of the DNA. And they say that subtle aspect is determined by all these things. And patients who developed cells with a good subtle aspect seem to have greater chance of recovery from cancer compared to the patients who didn't have that. So therefore, you know, even as every cell is formed, along with the DNA that's replicated, we are also having a replication of things that are determined by our attitudes, our vibrations, our vibes and, you know, our what we are made of spiritually. So it is almost as if science is also arriving to the fact that along with a physical body, there's a spiritual body that is being created. With that in mind, now we can appreciate why that doctor from the super specialty hospital said that it's a beautiful thing that we donate blood. Because apart from being physically pure and clean here, it is also surcharged and the subtle aspect of the blood also will be so beautiful. I won't be surprised if a patient receiving blood from the super specialty hospital suddenly starts feeling good and suddenly starts feeling more loving and more nice.
Definitely. In fact, you know, he was saying that they are looking at doing a research in that point because they're saying that the ease with which the patients are recouping, there could be a factor relating to the blood which they receive here.
Wow.
And in fact, so we could actually make it an appeal to all our listeners that, you know, this is a great opportunity because we always wonder, you know, we've been part of these celebrations, we've had the good opportunity to receive and absorb all the vibrations here. Is there anything we can do? I think this is definitely one obviously physical thing which we can do. Offer our blood in donation to the blood bank here. And in fact, we're going to make this a very serious move. We are having our plans for that. That whoever is here can come and give blood here and whoever is visiting Prashanthi Nilayam, because all Swami's devotees have taken to vegetarianism and giving up their bad qualities. So their blood is literally very precious, you know, more precious than blood of other people. And so they will really be doing something, giving back to Swami if they can come and do that blood donation on a regular basis here.
Prem, one more point that just struck my mind right now. I had read this article recently, another medical article. You know, that article was about organ donation, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Organ donation, eye donation and different organs that are being donated. It was speaking about donors who said that they received more than just the organ from the donor. Yeah, it was a very elaborate scientific article which stated that apart from the organ, people are also receiving personality. So therefore it is called as personality organs. They're no longer called organ donation, it's called personality organ donation. You know, it is almost like there was a person who was speaking about a heart transplant that took place. She says that she has now suddenly developed intense craving to eat meat. She had been a vegetarian all her life. She's telling, I don't know how I got a craving to eat meat because I don't even know what meat tastes like. But I'm just feeling like eating meat. There was another who said that he got a tendency to smoke. And scientific studies, you know, you cannot conclusively prove such things, but they have given very strong indications that what the person's mental makeup was, attitude makeup was, habits were, they seem to be influencing the habits and mental makeup and attitudes of the person who has received the donated organ. Wow. So they are saying that along with the organ, even a part of the personality is transferred. And if your personality is not strong enough to counter that, you will be overcome with that other personality. Now, while that is like a disturbing way that the article has portrayed, we can think of it positively too. This is another way for us to spread Swami's love and, you know, the beautiful thing that he has given us, that way we do samasta loka sukhino bhavantu. If we have led a physically pure life, abstaining from smoking, from non-vegetarian, from alcoholism, and we definitely spend our time in some sadhana, bhajans, vedam, just giving our blood will be more than just blood, more than just that liquid to a patient. It will be liquid love because it is a liquid plus divine love.
In many ways, in a sense, you could say that that's what Swami did. Because over these years, especially if you look at this Dashara festival, thousands of people would gather and that Purnachandra auditorium would be packed. And imagine they absorb all these vibrations and absorb all this smoke. And when they go back to their towns and villages, I'm sure that there would have been a way of seeding which Swami did, you know, spreading. Because I remember one of my seniors was sharing this with me during the Atirudra Mahayagnam, you know. The 9 days of Rudram Homam which was going on, there was one person who took off from his work for about 7 days, and he planned to come and sit here and spend the whole time, I think 11 days, sorry, you know, the 7 days.
It was 11 days, yes.
11 days. So he had taken off of 11 days. He wanted to come and stay here for the entire...
Just a small refresher. I believe it was something like for 11 days, 11 Homakundas, 11 people chanting 11 times. So it's all in the multiple of 11, right. Comes to some few lakh namakam and chamakam.
But in Patti it was not strictly that way because everybody was chanting Rudram.
Yes.
And I know many devotees and students who had learned Rudram by the end of those 11 days, even those who didn't know. And you know, this boy who had taken off and was here, after 3 days, he packed his bags and he left. Okay. So when my friend asked him, why did you leave? I thought you were coming here for staying the 11 days. And that boy said, no, I'm not prepared for what is happening to me when I sit here. Because he said, I'm becoming desireless.
Oh.
And sitting and listening to all these vibrations.
Oh.
You know, that is what these Vedic mantras can do, and that is what Vedam can do. You know, we often wonder why Swami gives so much importance to Vedas. Because we started by saying Vidvat Poshana and Veda Poshana. Imagine Swami has given it as one of his avataric missions to uphold the Vedas.
And I've also thought many times along these lines, Prem, that, you know, Swami never supported a single religion. Swami has always been for all the religions. And he says it also openly. I have not come to start a new religion. I want to make a Hindu a better Hindu, a Muslim a better Muslim, a Christian a better Christian. And, you know, there are Sarvadharma bhajans. Every time his emphasis has been on the equalness and unity of all religions. We know Swami is like that. And yet, the fact that Swami has backed the Vedas so much show only one thing. It proves beyond doubt that Vedas do not belong to any religion. The Vedas, in fact, are called Apaurusheya. I think we shall delve a little more deeper into this universal nature of the Vedas. And in order to inspire us in this discussion, I feel we should just listen to this one song that was composed specially for Swami's 85th birthday on how Swami has fostered this tender sapling of the Vedas and made it into a gigantic tree.
Sai premaye veda saramu.
విశ్వమంతటికి జీవనాధారము
వేదవాణి సకల జనులకు దారి దూపే దీపము వేదసారమే విశ్వమంతటికి జీవనాధారము వేదవాణి సకల జనులకు దారి దూపే దీపము
సాయి ప్రేమే వేద సారము
ప్రణవము వేదము సృష్టికి మూలము ప్రణవము వేదము సృష్టికి మూలము జనవాహినికి తెలుపగా ప్రణవము వేదము సృష్టికి మూలము జనవాహినికిది తెలుపగా
సోమకాసురుని సంహరించి గిల వేదరాశి ధరి చేర్చగా
అవతరించినావు స్వామి అవతరించినావు
అవతరించినావు స్వామి అవతరించినావు
వేద శాఖలే తోబుట్టువులుగరామునిగా ప్రభవించినావు
వేద శాఖలే తోబుట్టువులుగరామునిగా ప్రభవించినావు యాగముగాచి ఋషులను గ్రోచి దానములను పరిమార్చినావు యాగముగాచి ఋషులను బ్రోచి దానవులను పరిమార్చినావు గోపబాలునిగా అసురులే ధరించి నీ భక్తులే రక్షించినావు
గోపబాలునిగా అసురులే ధరించి నీ భక్తులే రక్షించినావు
అందించినావు వేదసారం అందించినావు
ఆనంద బాలుడై తన వారి గుర్తింపు పక్కనే వచ్చి ఆనంద బాలుడే ఆనంద
సంశయించినారు వేద పురుషని వవతరించగా సంశయించినారు
దర్శనముతో భ్రమలు తొలగి నీ దివ్య సన్నిధికి చేరారు
దర్శనముతో భ్రమలు తొలగి నీ దివ్య సన్నిధికి చేరారు
సగమగమగమగ సగసనిత
నిధికి ప్రశాంతి నిలయం మూలపీఠమై వెలిసింది
వేదనిధికి ప్రశాంతి నిలయం మూలపీఠమై వెలిసింది
యజ్ఞయాగముల వేద వైభవం దేగిరేకులై విరిసింది
యజ్ఞయాగముల వేద వైభవం దేగిరేకులై విరిసింది మహావృక్షమై పెరిగింది నీవు నాటిన పందరు మొలక సుమదల శోభతో మహావృక్షమై పెరిగింది
వేద ఘోష నినదించింది వేద ఘోష నినదించింది
జనవాహిని శృతి కలిపారు
కులము మతము భాషా మరచి జనవాహిని శృతి కలిపారు
Dear listeners, that was the song which was sung as part of the Prema Pravaham program, which was a part of the 80th birthday, 85th birthday celebrations in the Indoor Stadium.
In the Vidyagiri Stadium.
The Vidyagiri Stadium. And a compilation of all the songs which were sung on that occasion is being sold in our store. I'm not telling that because it's sold in our store, because it is one of the wonderful compilations of music and videos which were made, because as these songs were sung by Swami students, beautiful visuals of Swami's earlier years were being played on giant screens on that occasion. And I think it's a beautiful piece to possess, isn't it?
Definitely, Prem, because I feel that was also inaugurated in such a beautiful manner. The whole program was about Swami's life in musical form. The video was about Swami's life, and it was Swami sitting and watching his life. And wow, so many memories connected to that. But that will take us away from our topic, which we thought we can speak about and conclude with today, which is the Vedas, the universality of the Vedas. You know, one very wise person while giving a talk, he said that it is not as if the Vedas were created by God. Because when you say the Vedas were created by God, it allows for a time when the Vedas were not present. You know, if we see, the Vedas have been described as apaurusheya. Nobody knows who is the author of the Vedas, because the Vedas have no author.
Not of human origin.
Not of human origin, yeah. And even the people through whom the Vedas came, it is said that the Vedas didn't come from someone, it came through someone. Those people are called as mantra drashtaras,
right,
which means those who saw the mantras. It was almost like the mantras come through them, and then they learn the mantras, you know. So it was like they were saying that now the mantra has come through us, now let us learn the mantras. It is not as if they created or composed it. So therefore, the Vedas have been described as the breath of God. And this scholar was saying that, see, it is not as if whether the Lord came from the Vedas or the Vedas came from God. The Vedas are the breath of God. They coexist. Because the Lord cannot stay without his breath, right? So the Vedas are the breath of God, and therefore they belong to all religions, because all religions have God. And you know, it is Swami who has made it go even beyond all religions. The last line of the song said, Vedasaram, Sai Premaye Vedasaram. You know, it is said that the theists call upon God and say God is love. For the atheists, love itself becomes God, because that is the most divine thing that Swami says you can ever get. And that's why Swami never insisted on spreading concept of God, but spreading the concept of love. So God is love, love is God. And here, you know, it is said, Sai Premaye Vedasaramu. Swami's love is the essence of the Vedas. And therefore, even the atheists are there who are now picking up the Vedas simply because of something magical about it. They are not having any religious orientations, and yet they pick up the Vedas. So people with religious orientations, people without religious orientations, everybody are picking up the Vedas. And naturally so, because the Vedas are universal. They are not Hindu, they are not belonging to any religion, they are general and belong to all. And their one look at their contents will show why they are all-encompassing and general for everyone.
Right. You know, talking of Vedas, you were just saying that apaurusheya and mantra drashtas. You know, the beauty is, some of these people realized, and the way these people receive these mantras is when they absolutely still their mind.
Mm-hmm.
When they went into a state of supreme calmness, they receive these vibrations. It's, you know, the difference between an invention and a discovery. You don't say gravity exists from the time of Newton. You know, gravity always existed, Newton just found it. Mm-hmm. You know, these vibrations were like that. They were always there. These people discovered it and gave it to us. And how did they discover it? In the state of absolute stillness.
Mm.
And that is the beauty of these vibrations, because they were found in the state of stillness. When constantly heard, they can also induce the state of stillness.
Yes.
You know, that is precisely the experience one of our seniors shared with us, you know, Sonuram Shankar.
Mm.
He's here as part of the Sevadal. Incidentally, he was sharing when he was in Japan.
Mm.
The moment he landed in Japan, and you know, he started going to some of the centers, when people came to know that one of Swami's students were here, they all started flocking towards him and saying that, you know, you should teach us the Vedas.
Hmm.
And he was so surprised, because they were not Indians settled in Japan, they were actually Japanese.
Hmm.
and they wanted to learn Vedas because Swami was giving so much importance to Vedas.
Mm.
So they all pleaded with him and said, you should teach us Vedas. So then he started weekly classes, you know, along with bhajans. They used to have half an hour session of Vedas. And these people's thirst was like unquenchable. They said, no, you have to teach us more, teach us more. And he went on to have about 1.5 hours, 2 hour sessions during weekends, teaching them Vedas. And the interesting thing was what he experienced. He said, when he was teaching them Vedas, at some time, he would slip into states of thoughtlessness. When he used to teach them extendedly for, you know, half an hour to 1.5 hours.
The positive thoughtlessness.
Right, yes. He used to go into a state where his mind was absolutely still and there was not a thought crossing his mind. And he said it was a surprise for him because he was not somebody who had practiced meditation or practiced this thing. He said, and without any desire to be in that state. He said just constantly focusing on that sound and on that vibration took him to that state of thoughtlessness. And then that's why Swami maybe gave so much of importance to it. Even you know it, you don't know it. Just being there and listening to that sound is actually so powerful.
Sound has, you know, the even I remember they used to say that when there's a bridge across a river or whatever, there's a bridge and the army has to march across, the soldiers of the army are told to break their march.
Okay.
Because if they march in unison, and their marching frequency happens to match the resonance frequency of the bridge, it is said that the bridge can collapse. Imagine a few men marching across and breaking a bridge. It is known to happen. And therefore, when they march across a bridge, they break their march. They don't walk in perfect step. That is the power of sound. That is the power of sound. And
right, even we hear of avalanches happening when, you know, radio signals are sent. You're not supposed to send very high frequency radio signals in places which are vulnerable to avalanches because for the very same reason.
Yes.
The resonance frequency
if it
matches, you know, you could have a...
No, imagine if, you know, just the thought that Vedas are divine and they have, if we are able to match the resonance frequency, that's it. That is why Mr. Sonu Ram Shankar, as you said, without any intention, without any desire or without any practice for that, could simply attain that state of being, having no thoughts and being in perfect stillness. That is the kind of spiritual uplift the Vedas gives, and that's why, as you said, Swami used to constantly encourage. If we look even at the content of the Vedas, you know, it is not any religious oriented stuff. It is so totally universal. You know, you said, you talked about the discovery of gravity. Now, gravity is which religion? It belongs to no religion. In the same way, you know, there is the Ayurveda, which is medicine. And in Veda, we have the Samaveda, which is all about music. Music does not depend on any religion. People of all religions, all castes, atheists, thieves, everyone enjoys music. So too medicine. So, there are so many aspects of Veda which are universal. It is just that, you know, some of the things like we spoke about the yagnas. All these rituals appear to be like Hindu rituals, but they all were done with a kind of meaning, a deep inner significance, which if we understand, we will realize that there is so much of the spiritual in the ritual. All we need to do is catch the spirit, because without the spirit, even spiritual becomes a ritual.
Right, and that's a very profound point which you made, because even as you go through the ritual, always remember why you're doing it for. You know, that's what Swami used to insist. Till a certain stage, listening to the Vedas is good, but Swami would say that you have to learn and understand the meaning.
First the word-to-word meaning, and then the inner significance.
Inner significance, that's important. Because, you know, the rituals, as we were talking, initially we spoke about the yagna and many things which are done, you know, the Surya Namaskar which is done, and so many things. You know, each of these has a very important reason for us to understand. Because as you said in the beginning, action is something which is very important for us.
Hmm.
You know, we understand best when we express in action.
Hmm.
Now, have you noticed there's something, like suppose I want to be reminded of something. Let us say that I need to go to some place.
You need a reminder.
Okay, I need a reminder. If I come and tell you, hey Arvind, just remind me that I have to do this at this time. The act of telling you will actually imprint that in my memory.
And actually act as a reminder.
Right. And actually, the very fact that I've told you to remind me will keep that in my memory. Even if you don't remind me, because I've told you to remind me, I will remember it.
Correct.
Because something which is subtle, when it is expressed in action, kind of re-emphasizes itself in our mind. And that's why, you know, we have these rituals of people taking 3-4 spoons of water and drinking it. Then again, a spoon of water and drinking it. You know, where you chant mantras like, let this purify my body, let this purify my subtle body, let this purify my causal body. Actually, the thought is enough.
Yes.
But when we do it in action, we are making sure that it's reinforced and our mind is in what we are praying. Otherwise, you know, it just happens in the mind. And that is why there's always a set of actions which is related to a set of thought processes.
And then you also associate the chanting, which is the word.
Right.
And, you know, that reminds us of another beautiful thing that Swami always used to say, that manasekam, vachasekam, karmanyekam, mahatmanam.
Right.
When there is unity and purity of thought, word and deed, you become a great person, meaning you achieve anything that you wish to achieve. And what better way, because just having pure thoughts is not enough. Having that said into words and then having an associated action with it brings the unity and purity of thought, word and deed.
Exactly.
And completes.
Everything else, you know, the Kumkum Archana which was done, you know, in the earlier years, Swami used to permit Sumangalis to do that Kumkum Archana.
Sumangalis meaning married women.
Married women in the old mandir. Before the yajnas and all started, we have spoken about the palanquin procession which used to mark the Dashara celebration.
And the 9 different color robes that Swami used to wear.
Used to come in. And one of the other events which used to happen in old mandir was the Sumangali Puja, where married women would come and sit and worship Swami by doing that Kumkum Archana. And when you do that Kumkum Archana, what do you say? You just say that I worship this form of the Devi, I worship the Devi who does this, the Devi who, you know, who gives this benediction. So you are actually making an action associated with each prayer that you make.
So, and each prayer is based on a thought that it arouses.
Exactly. And, you know, one aspect of that divinity. So you are linking a thought with a word, with an action. And if you miss out any one of this, as you're saying, that, you know, vachasekam, manasekam, karmanyekam, mahatmanam. And when
Swami says, manasanyat, vachasanyat, karmanyanyat, duratmanam.
And that is why when we do the ritual without the spirit,
it's useless.
It is useless. And when we keep the spirit always in the mind and do the ritual, it turns spiritual.
Yes. At the same time, criticizing, doing the ritual without the spirit is of no use. At the same time, just keeping the spirit and condemning rituals is also not good.
Right.
So it is good that we realize the importance, significance. And for us, Sai devotees, Prem, it becomes so easy because Swami gives so much of importance to Dasara. We love Swami and we are convinced that whatever He does is for our ultimate good and it is always beneficial. Knowing that, we see 10 days He would be there sitting at the yagnam for hours on the end and He would be there to receive the final offering on the Vijayadashmi day. Simply
and
by the fact...
go around sprinkling that sanctified water on all the devotees.
Rose water,
there.
Yes. Simply that one single fact should be enough to convince us that there is something really special about the Vedas and the Dasara Yagnam. And just because we do not understand it, it is not right that we condemn it or criticize it. It is best that we follow Swami's words, adopt it, practice it, and then learn through our own experience, because that is something that nobody can negate, nobody can nullify. It is for us to own and cherish.
Very true. You know, in fact, we are at an advantage because we know that if Swami has done it, it must be special and it must be good. Our only work is now to find out why it is special and
correct.
You know, well on why it is to be done. Maybe that will give us a better understanding. Even as we are doing and even as we are participating in all this, try to find out the reason why Swami let us do all these things and forced us to do it with love, not with the brute force which we talk of and force.
Yes, so with that, the clock in our studios is showing 1:58. Dear listeners from around the world, we hope that you enjoyed this. There are a lot more things that we can speak about Navaratri and Dasara. There are a lot more things that we are unaware about Navaratri and Dasara. It's been a learning process for Prem and myself, and hope it has been the same for all of us too. Offering our most deepest gratitude to Swami for this beautiful opportunity and offering our pranams at His lotus feet, we would like to leave you with this song, on the other side of which we will have Love to Love.
सर्व मंगल मांगल्य शिवे स సర్వార్థ సాధికే శరణ్యే త్రయంబకే దేవీ నారాయణీ నమోస్తుతే నారాయణీ నమోస్తుతే మృదుపాణి వందే జననీ విద్యాదాయిని వాణీ వీణా మృదుపాణి సురచిర రూపిణి వర శుభకారిణి అఖిల జనాచిత అజరాణి నమో నమో సరస్వతి తవ స్మరణేన పాప వినశ్యతి వందే జననీ విద్యాదాయిని వాణీ వీణా మృదుపాణి కమలాసన కమనీయమానసా కలహార పీఠ నివాసిని కమలాసన కమనీయమానసా కలహార పీఠ నివాసిని స్వరసురాపగా తరంగ విహరణ పరితోషిత చిత నివాసిని రాగతాల భావాకృత విలాస సంగీతాకృత శోభిని రవిమల కావ్య అలంకార సముచేత కవిజన హృదయోలాసిని వందే జననీ విద్యాదాయిని వాణీ వీణా మృదుపాణి నిగమాంగమ వనాంతచరన్నవ నిరుపమ మయూర భామిని నిగమాంగమ వనాంతచరన్నవ నిరుపమ మయూర భామిని నవనయుగల కలల్ మధురతరా నవ్యసుధాజిత వర్షిణి సురమునిగణ పరివర్ధిత రమణి సరసకళాకృత శోభిని శ్రీకర జ్ఞాన ప్రకాశ ప్రదాయక ఓంకారనాద వినోదిని వందే జననీ విద్యాదాయిని వాణీ వీణా మృదుపాణి సురచిర రూపిణి వర శుభకారిణి అఖిల జనాచిత అజరాణి నమో నమో సరస్వతి తవ స్మరణేన పాప వినశ్యతి
సును ప్రభు స Thank you. सुनो प्रभु साईनाथ
वानर वीरा